This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about MarTech from calendar weeks 14 and 15. Frenis is a B2B market research company that supports enterprise marketing teams in unlocking the full potential of their customer data with the help of AI. You can find more info in the description.
So if you've ever bought like 7 different software tools to fix your pipeline, you know the pain.
Oh, absolutely. You spend months on implementation and then you just realize your revenue growth has actually slowed down.
Right.
If you're listening right now and you're looking at a dashboard that just doesn't quite match your CRM reality, well, you know exactly what that kind of diagnostic muddy water feels like. Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah, today we are pulling from a stack of recent highly debated LinkedIn posts from top MarTech professionals. We really want to uncover the structural shifts happening in B2B marketing right now.
Exactly. We're moving past the theoretical fluff. We're looking directly at system architecture, data foundations, and, well, the somewhat alarming reality of AI orchestration.
It is definitely alarming. And the overarching theme across all of these professional discussions is, I mean, it's just a fundamental breakdown of the old models.
Yeah.
For over a decade, you know, the standard operating procedure in B2B marketing was to buy a core platform and then infinitely bolt on peripheral tools to solve every little micro problem that popped up.
Right, just slapping band-aids on it.
Exactly. But that era is effectively over. The infrastructure is just buckling under its own weight.
Let's actually start by dismantling that core concept. Though one B2B marketers have clung to like a life raft, which is the MarTech stack.
Oh, the famous stack.
Right. We're seeing industry heavyweights like Scott Brinker, Frans Rammersma, and Hugo Boudry all pointing out that the traditional concept of the stack is basically dead.
Yeah, they say it's being replaced by this composable canvas.
Exactly. And I was mapping this out and I realized the old stack was basically a game of Jenga.
A game of Jenga. I love that.
Yeah, think about it. You start with a solid block, maybe your email platform. Then you add an intent data tool, then an enrichment layer, then, I don't know, a lead scoring application.
Right, just piling them up.
Right. Every piece you add might serve a specific function, but it makes the entire structure wildly unstable. You pull the wrong block or, you know, an API connection breaks and the whole thing comes crashing down.
That's so true.
But this new system design they're advocating for, it's completely different. It's more like a modern city grid. The infrastructure, like the data layer, is shared universally below ground.
Right.
Then the buildings, which are your various activation tools and apps, they just plug into that grid seamlessly above ground. But if the stack is dead, why do organizations still operate like chronic tool hoarders?
Well, the mechanical difference between those two models is really where the friction lives.
Yeah.
When you build a Jenga tower, the friction comes from the pieces trying to balance on top of each other.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But in MarTech, the friction isn't coming from the software tools themselves. It's coming from the absolute absence of that underlying city grid. Mm. There was this brilliant but somewhat painful reality shared by Cameron Korniak recently on LinkedIn that illustrates this perfectly.
Oh, I saw that. He was hired to audit a startup, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
His mandate was very specific. Fix HubSpot.
Amanda, I'm sure half the people listening right now have been given at some point.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. But when he actually got under the hood and mapped the data flow, he found just a complete architectural disaster.
Wait, what did he find?
He found 3 separate customer relationship management platforms. 3.
Oh, wow.
And an enterprise resource planning tool, an ERP, that was only integrated with the oldest of the 3 CRMs. Mm-hmm. Plus, there was an inherited business intelligence tool that was supposed to be their source of truth, but literally no one in the company knew how to write a query for it.
That sounds like a nightmare.
7 disconnected systems in total, with 0 lateral data flow. So Korniak realized the problem was never HubSpot. The problem was trying to force a collection of siloed software to cooperate within a company culture that itself couldn't cooperate.
And rather than doing the grueling work of fixing that underlying architecture, marketers just keep falling into the exact same trap. We try to buy our way out of structural problems.
We really do.
Vivek Nair and Bill Habib highlighted this behavioral loop perfectly. They noted that marketers will buy virtually anything that promises to fix their marketing, provided it doesn't require them to actually fix their marketing fundamentals.
It's the shiny object syndrome.
Exactly. We just keep buying new tools. Only now, instead of buying a new automation platform, we're buying something repackaged as an AI agent.
Right.
But as Habib points out, if you are plugging an AI agent into a system with 7 disconnected CRMs, You aren't innovating. You are just renaming the bloat.
Yeah, and that behavior, I mean, it made sense 10 years ago. Back then, as Kenneth Wagner and Brett House note, buying a shiny new tool actually gave you a competitive edge.
Because no one else had it yet.
Exactly. If you had an automated lid scoring tool and your competitor didn't, you won the deal. But today, we're looking at a landscape with over 15,000 distinct MarTech tools.
That is just an absurd number.
It is. And every single one of your competitors can buy the exact same off-the-shelf software that you can, usually with a corporate credit card, in under 5 minutes.
Right.
So because the tools are completely commoditized now, the competitive advantage no longer lives in the software vendor you choose. It lives entirely in your proprietary workflows, your unified data models, and your bespoke decision systems.
So if the stack is dead and the tools are just commoditized, organizations have to stop operating like tool hoarders. We have to look at what actually holds the modern marketing ecosystem together.
Right, the grid.
Exactly, the grid. That brings us to the new center of gravity, which is the data foundation. The Jenga pieces are gone, and unified data is becoming the absolute single source of truth. Specifically, we're seeing warehouse-native architectures completely replacing traditional siloed customer data platforms, or CDPs. And the market is aggressively voting with its wallet here.
Well, definitely.
Josh Kanagi and Alan Tran pointed out that Hightouch, which is a primary player in this space, just hit $100 million in annual recurring revenue.
Wow.
Yeah, that level of enterprise adoption is massive validation. Companies are finally realizing they want their execution tools to run on their own proprietary data rather than just handing it all over to third-party vendors.
And the mechanics of this shift are critical to understand. In a traditional CDP model, you are essentially copying your customer data from your central database, moving it over to the marketing platform, and storing it there.
Which sounds incredibly inefficient.
It is. It creates latency, it creates security risks, and it means your marketing team is always operating on a slight delay.
Huh.
Warehouse native architecture means the marketing tools sit directly on top of your central data warehouse.
So there's no copying.
Zero copying. The tools simply query the live data where it already lives. Michael Burton and Jessica Leeds gave a fantastic example of how this practically changes deployment.
Okay, what was their take?
They argue that if you look at a data warehouse platform like Databricks and a customer engagement platform like Braze, you shouldn't think of them as two separate vendor relationships. They have to be architected as a single unified organism.
Interesting.
Yeah, Databricks is the bedrock. It houses the absolute source of truth for customer identity, behavioral signals, and predictive models. And Braze is simply the intelligent activation layer sitting directly on top of that bedrock.
And the mechanical distinction there of sitting directly on top versus sitting downstream, that changes the entire operational math.
Completely.
Because if your activation tool sits downstream, you're syncing audiences in overnight batches. You're basically reading yesterday's newspaper to trade stocks today.
Right, you're always behind.
But when your tool sits natively on the warehouse, a churn risk signal can fire in the data model at 2.0 p.m., and a targeted retention journey launches at 2.01 p.m., before the customer even closes their browser tab.
That immediate causality is the holy grail.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting there requires navigating a structural minefield, because organizations know they have a data problem, but their approach to fixing it is fundamentally flawed.
Oh, this is exactly what Gene DeLibero dissected so well. He pointed out the corporate habit of conducting sequential audits.
Oh, yes, the phases.
Right. A company will hire consultants to audit the people in phase one. Then they audit the process in phase two. Then data in phase three and content in phase four. Neatly categorized.
Too neatly.
Exactly. Because DeLibero argues that MarTech infrastructure doesn't fail neatly inside those isolated categories. It fails in the white space between them.
Ah, yes. The handoff.
Yeah, a broken internal process destroys the data quality during the handoff, and then that bad data makes your automated campaigns actively dangerous to the brand. So I have to challenge this model. How does a CMO actually bridge that white space? Because right now it feels like bridging it requires a PhD in data engineering.
And most marketing leaders definitely do not have that.
No, they don't.
That gap is the core dilemma for modern marketing leadership. And it's precisely where CMOs are making their most expensive mistakes today. Shimrit Sabag and Emil Bjørnskjær addressed this head on.
What did they say?
They pointed out that CMOs are desperately trying to use artificial intelligence to bridge that white space. They treat AI as this magical capability fix that will somehow decipher the mess.
Like waving a magic wand.
Exactly. But AI cannot fix your marketing if the underlying identity resolution and measurement foundations are broken. If a user's web browsing session can't be reliably linked to their final purchase event in your database, throwing an AI prediction model on top of that doesn't solve the problem.
Just scales your existing blind spots.
Yes. It simply scales the blind spots.
It essentially gives you the power to make highly confident, terrible decisions at light speed.
Exactly. The only way a CMO bridges the white space is by fundamentally changing their relationship with the IT and data departments. The CMO has to pull up a chair at the data engineering table and explicitly claim the data infrastructure as a primary marketing asset.
You can't just toss it over the fence anymore.
No, it is no longer acceptable to say, the data warehouse is IT's problem, I just run the campaigns. The data pipeline is the new marketing plumbing, and the CMO owns the commercial outcome of that plumbing.
Okay, so let's assume an organization actually achieves that. The plumbing is pristine, the warehouse is humming, and the CMO has secured the data foundation.
A rare but beautiful scenario.
Right. The next logical question is, what runs on top of it? And the answer is shifting rapidly away from human marketers manually building segments and pushing execution buttons.
My goodness.
We are moving toward AI agents making autonomous decisions based on live signals. We're transitioning from the era of cute generative AI experimentation, like, you know, having a bot write a blog post, into full-scale transactional orchestration.
And the distinction between generative experimentation and transactional execution is massive.
Mm.
Sarah McNamara recently shared some highly practical use cases for autonomous bots that show just how close we are to this reality.
Yeah, her stuff is amazing.
She is actively building AI bots for revenue operations that function as a continuous co-pilot for ops. And these aren't just novelty summarization tools. They're taking over complex analytical workflows.
The mechanics of her use cases are fascinating. Mainly because they don't require massive enterprise software investments. They just require smart prompting and clean data access.
Right.
Like she deployed a sales pipeline bot that autonomously checks open CRM deals every single morning. It flags opportunities that have gone stale based on historical velocity, and it automatically tags the specific sales reps with recommended actions.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and she built another bot that acts as a solutions brief generator, surfacing accounts that need immediate renewal attention. She even has a competitive intelligence bot that scrapes competitor websites and cross-references that data against internal sales called transcripts.
See, what McNamara is building represents a critical evolution from tasks to transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Satya Narayana introduces a concept he calls ConvertX that perfectly frames that.
ConvertX. Okay.
Yeah, he points out that in 2024, the industry figured out how to make AI talk to customers effectively. We built conversational interfaces, barter chatbots, all that.
Sure.
But looking toward 2026, AI's primary value won't be having open-ended conversations. It will be closing transactions with verifiable kinetic outcomes in the database.
Which shifts the entire financial model of marketing. We basically stop optimizing for cost per click or cost per lead, and we move toward a cost per outcome or CPO model. We're giving AI agents bounded autonomy to actually execute a workflow, whether that's provisioning a software trial or sending a custom pricing contract, all based on real-time CRM data and inventory levels.
Bounded autonomy is the operative phrase there. The AI is authorized to drive a commercial outcome, but only within strict operational guardrails.
I want to push back on the safety of that autonomy, though, because from a brand management perspective, letting an AI autonomously negotiate or execute deals sounds like a massive liability.
Oh, it absolutely is if you aren't careful.
Gregory Pete offered a brilliant critique of Scott Brinker's composable canvas model that isolates this exact fear.
Mm.
Pete warns the industry about what he calls strategic hallucinations.
Okay, what does he mean by that?
Well, this isn't the classic AI hallucination where a language model just makes up a fake statistic. A strategic hallucination is much more dangerous. It happens when an AI makes a choice that is factually correct based on perfectly clean data, but is strategically completely off-brand.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, like it contradicts the core identity or pricing philosophy of the company. So how do we architect our systems to put decisional governance upstream of the data? How do we ensure these autonomous agents don't just go rogue, offering wild discounts or sending completely off-tone emails just because the math says it will optimize a conversion rate?
That is the defining architectural challenge of the next 5 years. Data without an upstream decisional model just produces raw insights. But data flowing through a centralized decisional model produces governed verdicts.
Governed verdicts. I like that.
This connects perfectly to John Miller's predictions regarding the future of traditional marketing automation platforms, or MAPs. Historically, the MAP, like tools like Marketo or Eloqua, was the absolute center of the marketing universe.
Right. It was the engine room where every rule was manually coded.
But Miller argues that the role of the traditional MAP is shrinking dramatically. As these new AI agents take over the actual execution of tasks at the edge of the network, the MAP evolves into a marketing context and orchestration service.
So what does that look like in practice?
It essentially becomes the centralized corporate brain. It stores your operational guidance, your brand voice parameters, your hard governance rules like email frequency limits, and your compliance consent logs.
Oh, okay. So it functions like a highly advanced, strictly enforced corporate handbook.
Exactly.
The AI agent might spot an opportunity to accelerate a deal, but before it is allowed to send an email or offer a discount, it must query the MAP to check the rules and engagement.
Precisely. That is how you put governance upstream. You bind the AI's autonomy with strategic context. The agent executes the transaction, but the MAP ensures it never commits a strategic hallucination.
So if we zoom out and look at this complete picture, a universal city grid of data at the bottom, and AI agents executing workflows at the top based on strict upstream governance, we have to ask, what exactly is the role of the human B2B marketer in this new model?
That is the million-dollar question.
Because if the machines are handling the execution and the data layer is handling the routing, the human operating model has to fundamentally change. We're seeing marketing operations evolve from tactical campaign execution into pure system architecture.
And the human element is actually where these models are currently failing the hardest. If we look specifically at revenue operations, or RevOps, the transition has been incredibly rocky.
How so?
Well, Mario Pischoff and Don Crow have both highlighted that RevOps, as a holistic organizational concept, has largely failed to deliver on its promises.
Wow. That is a harsh assessment for a framework that almost every modern B2B enterprise claims to be running.
It is harsh, but the empirical evidence backs it up. Pischoff shared a highly illuminating example of a company with $120 million in ARR. This organization invested $5 million into new sales tooling, intent data platforms, and additional headcount.
That's a massive investment.
Massive. Yet after that capital injection, their overall revenue growth actually slowed down.
Wait, really?
Yes. And the root cause wasn't the software. It was the fact that their sales, marketing, and customer success departments were operating in fiercely guarded silos.
Of course.
Marketing was generating thousands of automated leads, and the sales team was manually rejecting 60% of them because they didn't trust the scoring model. The departments flat out refused to share raw data or align on shared metrics.
Which perfectly proves the point. You cannot throw an advanced AI agent at a leaky organizational funnel where human departments actively withhold context from one another. It's an organizational failure masquerading as a tech failure.
Exactly. And because of that, the way operations professionals measure and communicate their value has to change immediately. Wade Khoury and Funmi Marin are urging MOP's professionals to entirely change their vocabulary.
Changing their vocabulary in what way?
Well, Marin points out that operations teams spend a massive amount of their unofficial time fixing database permissions or manually routing leads. It's pure plumbing work.
Right.
But if you walk into a meeting with a CFO and talk about your lead routing rules, you will be viewed strictly as a cost center.
Absolutely.
So Khoury argues that ops leaders must translate that plumbing into commercial outcomes. You don't talk about API uptime. You talk about speed to lead and revenue velocity. You prove how your system design directly accelerated cash flow. That is how operations secures a seat at the executive table.
And driving that level of alignment requires an entirely new breed of leadership. Anna Moran and Ken Madsen suggest that organizations desperately need to formalize a new role. The chief marketing technologist.
Or a dedicated strategic owner.
Right. Someone who actually owns the entire end-to-end marketing supply chain. Because right now, the traditional CMO is often too focused on brand and channel performance.
And the CIO is too focused on security and infrastructure.
Exactly. Neither of them actually owns the connective tissue, the data plane, that allows these AI agents to function across departments. This new leader has to carry the ultimate fiduciary duty for customer data.
Transitioning into that kind of system-level leadership is a brutal emotional shift for professionals who grew up in the trenches, though. Mike Rizzo touched on the psychological transition for operations leaders, and it perfectly explains why so many teams struggled to scale.
It's hard to let go.
So hard. Hmm? Historically, you get promoted in marketing ops because you are the absolute best at doing the technical work. You build perfect, rigid, tightly controlled systems.
Right.
But the moment you transition into leadership, your core job stops being about the systems themselves and starts being about the humans operating those systems.
You have to completely let go of the control that made you successful in the first place.
You really do. Rizzo emphasizes that the leader's primary function becomes creating psychological safety. Your team needs to feel completely comfortable raising their hand in a sprint meeting and saying, hey, this new AI workflow you designed is inherently flawed and it's going to break our routing.
Yeah, because if you don't build that safety, they'll just watch it break.
They will watch the system break quietly. And a quiet, undocumented break in an automated architecture is the most dangerous kind of failure a company can experience.
I want to synthesize that reality with a brilliant point raised by Niels van Meerdermanzi and Gagan Bijsa. They observe that we are fundamentally moving from an era of marketers who use tools to an era of operators who build with AI.
Yes.
So if human resistance to change is the true bottleneck here, how does a traditional B2B marketing department culturally shift to act more like a software engineering sprint team?
The cultural shift only happens when you completely redefine what the marketing department actually produces. If your team views itself purely as a campaign factory, measured only by how many webinars they host or emails they send, you will never make the leap.
Right.
You have to start treating your internal platforms, your data pipelines, and your AI agents as actual primary products. You run agile sprints to improve them. You manage technical backlogs.
You build observability layers into the data so you know instantly when an API degrades.
Exactly. You have to shift the culture to value the integrity of the architecture just as much, if not more, than the creative output of the campaigns.
And that architectural integrity is going to be tested in ways we are only just beginning to comprehend. I want to leave you with a final forward-looking thought based on everything we've unpacked today.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've spent this entire deep dive analyzing how B2B marketing is evolving into a complex ecosystem of autonomous AI agents orchestrated by centralized platforms running on universal data grids.
Right.
But we've only looked at the sell side. What happens when your enterprise buyer's procurement process is also fully agentic?
Oh, wow.
What happens when their finance department deploys autonomous AI to source vendors, evaluate features, and benchmark pricing? Will the future of B2B marketing simply be our AI agents negotiating directly with their AI agents over API endpoints?
That is wild to think about.
And if so, how do we architect our data, our content, and our strategic governance for a reality where the primary consumer of our marketing isn't even human? Think back to that diagnostic muddy water we started with. The landscape isn't getting any simpler.
No, it is not.
But at least now we know that to survive it, we have to stop staring at the broken Jenga pieces and start paying very close attention to the grid connecting them.
A truly fascinating and imminent reality to prepare for. The architecture really is everything.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, AI and B2B marketing, go-to-market, and social selling.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Make sure to subscribe.
And keep questioning your systems.